you successfully download another episode of Above Ground Testing, the podcast. Now, usually for this podcast, you'd be listening to a musical introduction, but I'm not going to have one right now for reasons I'll let you know about shortly. My name is Paul Gilbert. I'm your host for the next few minutes of this podcast, which will continue until I finally stop talking. And I want to thank you for tuning in, downloading, and being a part of the community. Now, usually what happens with this podcast is I have a musical introduction. I don't have it. I will have some news. None. And I will read some poetry that has appeared in the most recent issue of the eZine Above Ground Testing, which you can read at www.abovegroundtesting.com and clicking on the link that says Current Issue. Well, I've decided to change the theme a bit and talk about some of the songs and hymns that I enjoy. I'm doing this because, well, I'm the host producer of it, I can do whatever I want, but I'm also doing this because I did get some feedback in regards to the Christmas edition, and thank you for those of you who wrote, and thank you for those of you who did listen. If you haven't listened to it, I encourage you just to go down the page a bit of the podcast and you can find it. Lindsay is a wonderful singer, let me tell you that. She's one of those great hidden talents that there's no limelight on her, but those who know her really appreciate what she does with her musical talent, and she is a true treasure to those who do know her. And so, like many people, music is an important part of my life. I don't think there's too many moments in a day when I'm not listening to some sort of music. I recently got satellite radio. I know that puts me in a minority, and it truly is another avenue of discovering different styles of music to enjoy. As you may have guessed from a large number of the openings to this podcast, I like electronic music. I like dance and all that. So, and you know, I don't know why. I've got no rhythm skills. I have no dancing ability. Yet, there's something about it that appeals, and it doesn't matter. It could be the non-vocal stuff. It could be the vocal. It just appeals to me. And I would say that my taste in music has grown over the years, become eclectic. I listen to different forms of music. I'm sure what I'm going to say is true for a lot of you. You know, classical music, classic rock, alternative, electronic, even nerdcore appeals to me. In fact, I'm thinking of doing a podcast on nerdcore eventually, but that's for future episodes, so I'm not going to worry. And I'm not alone either. Like I said, I'm sure many of you out there listening to me would agree. Your tastes are different. It used to be years ago that if you were a certain age or, you know, certain demographics, this is the sort of music you listen to. Period. End of discussion. End of debate. You didn't listen to anything else. If you were a 12-year-old girl in the suburbs, you would listen to whatever pop Princess was out there. If you were, you know, a black older teen, young adult, you probably listen to more urban music. It's changing. In fact, I was in a conversation a couple months ago, and the topic of music came up, and I said, you know, we can't pigeonhole people. And one of the people says, you're absolutely right, you can't. He said he has a son, and that son of his is comfortable with all sorts of music styles and varieties. He was not just a hard rock guy or country guy. He was also in different sorts of music. And people are comfortable with that. It used to be, you know, if you were a certain age and you listened to anything but X style of music, you were totally uncool. In fact, it was even uncool to admit listening to it, that the music that was outside that very narrow parameter of music. But now, people are comfortable. And then here comes the internet. What does the internet give us? Vast styles of music that transcends generations. You know, people are loving music for what it is and are not accepting a new way of looking at music. So, because they can sample it, people are really getting impressed with it. Again, let me talk about another conversation I had. I said a couple years ago, if somebody was asking me how people are going to be grouped, and I said, you know, I think people are going to be grouped by the musical taste. You know, you would have various tribes based upon musical style, and really, I think I was totally wrong. I don't think so. To some degree, yes, but to a lot of degree, no. And so with this issue, I turn now to the idea of sacred music. Church music, if you want. Hymns, even if you want more. And if you know anything about church music, you know there's been quite an upheaval in church music over the last couple of years. The church has gone through one of those transitions that a occurs maybe, I'm going to guess and say once every 100 years or so. And the problem when there's a transition is that you're not quite where you should be, and you're kind of muddling in the middle, trying to get through. And so you have clashes of culture and style taking place. And sadly, the word clashes is right. There is a transition, and it's happening throughout. Let me give you an example or two. Well, of course, I'm going to give you an example or two. The church, and again, I'm only speaking North American church here. Well, probably a lot of Western churches that have the culture, the finances, and the ability to enjoy technology are going away from the classic hymn book to the PowerPoint presentation. I think there is an actual phrase for it, paperless worship or something like that, and let me say this. You don't want to sit in a room with me and get me talking about PowerPoint presentation. It is just not a good thing. Okay, this will be a short rant. Not a long rant, but a short rant. I am not a fan of PowerPoint presentations. It's one of those things, you know, it's one of the things where technology has made it more complex than it should be. Opening a page of a book is not complex. The technology behind getting a picture, of a hymn or song from a computer to a screen is an amazing experience, an event. And there are steps involved, and each step contains the potential of at least 20 things going wrong. And so if you have a 5-step event, the potential is 100 things could possibly go wrong, and usually 20 or 30 will go wrong, and it'll be a flop. So that's one transition. Again, don't get me started about PowerPoint. It's going to be a long rant, but I'm not a fan of PowerPoint presentation. Okay, I'm going to keep going. There is another transition, and it's just one of the continual transitions of music. One time there was the hymns, okay? The Golden Age, probably the 1700s, 1800s. Then came the gospel songs, probably late 1800s, early 1900s. And that kind of continued for a while. And now we come to what's called the worship song, or the worship chorus style of worship. No longer does it seem that churches want to have the 3 or 4 verse hymn. They go now for these praise and worship songs and choruses. And it's not like you have one song or one hymn and then, you know, something else happens. But you have a string put together that hopefully is thematic. That there's a theme running through the 3 or 4 choruses or 5 or 6 songs that are strung together that pertain to one particular theme that hopefully all goes around. Now, with some ministers, some congregations, some worship leaders, and here's another problem of the transition coming through. They have decided that only this is the only style of worship that will be in their congregation or fellowship. This is it. If they have one hymn or two hymns, it's done grudgingly, and it's almost tokenism. In fact, some won't even have it. They say they want nothing else to do with that. The old style of worship, as far as they're concerned, is bad, it's wrong, it's out of here. They've replaced everything with what they consider modern. They've put in, like I said, instead of choirs or musical groups, they have worship bands that usually contains guitars, drums, whatever else. And there's always a worship leader who basically takes the stage. And unfortunately, and so often what happens in the church is that lines get drawn. And once you draw a line, it becomes a wide, vast gulf or valley. And so on one side you see the people, we will have this modern style of worship and nothing else. And you have this one side that says, no, we want the hymns of the church. And do you think the groups can come together? Never. Not at all. Now, that was the first. Now, I think, and this may be the only positive thing about the transition, is that you are now seeing people begin to realize that, you know, we can blend. There's nothing wrong with that. Because what is the ultimate aim of worship? It's worship God. And I will leave that word God for whatever way you understand him or whatever spiritual power it is. So the churches came in, this new style of worship started, churches were split, and you know, sadly they were, along musical tastes. And while the secular people were becoming eclectic, the church was becoming polarized. You could only have this style, or you could only have that style. But now, fortunately, I think people are realizing that the pendulum swings back to the middle. And people are saying, you know, we can have both sides. And the battles which were stupid are now becoming over. People are wanting that middle ground. They see that sacred is really anything. Now, of course, that's the good news. Other problems with the time of transition is that we're seeing a lot of different music come in. Most of it is pretty horrible. You know, let's be honest. It is terrible. But then, that's probably the problem of a transition, is that you get a lot of junk. But as always, the cream rises to the top. The good stuff will remain. For example, the stuff like by Graham Kendrick, you know, Shine Jesus Shine. I think that has become a hymn of the church. There's going to be a lot of that. I'm sure when Charles Wesley started to write, he wrote some clunkers out there that I am sure if he could look down and see 200 years later, he is saying to himself, I am so glad they have forgotten that song. That this song stays, I'm happy. This song is gone, I am more than happy. And probably there are some songs he wished would stay. That's what happens. The willowing takes place. The good goes, the good stays. The bad, we pray, goes. So in 20, 30, 40 years, when the transition ends and the new styles become accepted, and whatever way the church music goes, a lot of stuff will be relegated to the trash pile, and occasionally some people might bring it up as sort of, oh boy, wasn't that funny that people actually thought this was good music? And I have spoken for, close to 12 minutes, 30 seconds. I wanted to talk to you about one of my favorite hymns, and I'm just going to play it for you right now. So let me just pause this, and I'll incorporate into the podcast right about now. Song is Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. pilgrim through this barren land, I am weak, but thou art mighty. Hold me with thy powerful hand. Bread of heaven, feed me till I want no more. I debated whether I wanted to sing that first verse for you, a cappella, but I thought that it would be best for me not to do that. It's one of the classics of sacred songs. It is a Welsh song based upon the tune Cymrwanda, which was written by the Welsh songwriter John Hughes, and it refers to the Rhondda Valley in Wales, but there was already a tune called Rhondda, so he added Cym, which by the way speaks of, is translated valley. The tune is used for the song Guide Me, O the Great Jehovah, maybe the best known, best loved. The song Guide Me was written by William Williams, and different translations, or shall I say different versions, would have Guide Me, O the Great Redeemer, or Jehovah. William Williams is considered one of the greatest hymn writers in Welsh history, wrote hundreds of them. He was an important leader of the Welsh Methodist revivals of the 18th century. And speaking of sacred music, it's amazing how many revivals express themselves in music, but then again, I guess we shouldn't be too surprised about that, because music is how we articulate what we feel. Because music is simply poetry, but to music. Or rather, hymns are sacred poetry. And isn't all songs poetry put to music? Now, Mr. Williams wrote predominantly in Welsh, because he is Welsh. And a number of his hymns have been translated in English, of which this is one of them. He has also wrote a sizable number of hymns in English, so he was appealed to both groups. This hymn, I'm going to try to pronounce the Welsh. Please don't write. Agwild, Argwind, Arwain Twil, Anawich, is perhaps the most known of it. It is really thought of as the unofficial anthem of Wales. If you go to YouTube, and for example, Kathleen Jenkins has a couple of times, there's a few videos of her singing it, and I believe it's she has the last verse, and she uses as sort of the chorus, Wales Forever. Nothing wrong with that. It has been sung at state events such as the funerals of Diana, Princess of Wales, and the Queen's Mother. It is sung, and I did a quick check, it's amazing the number of hymn books of different denominations that contain it that would not be considered either Calvinistic or Methodist. It's also sung at rugby games in Wales. It's almost like I said, the unofficial anthem of Wales. And so you get an arena of 40,000 plus rugby fans, and they're singing at the top of their lungs, Guide me, O thou great Jehovah, and probably in Welsh, probably in English, a combination of it. And that must be an amazing sight. It must be an amazing sound to hear that. It's something we don't get in sporting events here in North America, with the exception maybe of U.S. college game football games. There you get people singing their college songs, but we don't get it. I mean, we can't imagine, you know, the fans at Yankee Stadium in New York, for example, staying up to sing Guide Me, O Thou Great Jehovah. That is, unless they could incorporate the phrase, you suck, A-Rod, into the song. But that just seems foreign. What makes this song so loved, certainly it's a word, certainly it's a tune, is really the message. And in some way, the three verse, actually there's five, but the three that we most know about, examine the troubles of the children of Israel through the wilderness. So basically, Williams took the book of Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy, and encapsulated it into these three verses. So he took a 40-year experience of the travel through the wilderness of the children of Israel, from the liberation from Egypt, going to the Red Sea, into these three verses. And he talks about, Guide me, O thou great Jehovah. Pilgrim, that wasn't their home. Through this barren land, it was a desert. And the acknowledgement, we're weak, you're mighty, and we need you. The bread of heaven, you know, the manna that came daily, except on the Sabbath, fed them every day, with the exception I just spoke of, during that 40-year. The crystal fountain, the water they had, they were in the desert, they didn't have water. The guidance, let the fire and cloudy pillar, cloud by day, fire by night. They didn't know where they're going. They didn't have GPS. They didn't have Google Maps. But they had this pillar that was guiding them. Where it rested, they stayed. Where it moved, they moved. So he took this song, he took that experience and wrote it into these songs. Last verse, when I tread the verge of Jordan, the idea of Jordan for some reason has become synonymous with the experience of death. Not too sure why, it just does, okay? Lead me safe on Canaan's side. Going through life, we can see that the dependence of God, and this, you know, really flies in the face of our culture of self-dependency. You know, we're told, well, you be yourself, you depend upon nothing or nobody, although, then again, we have the other extreme, which says you're totally whacked out, you need some sort of help, be it drugs, be it some sort of mood of altering medication, or Dr. Phil and his pop culture pablum. You know, it interests me that, you know, Dr. Phil or Dr. Laura, you know, people call up Dr. Phil, Dr. Laura, I have this problem, and in a matter of mere moments, mere minutes, 2-3 at the most, of which 2/3 of it is insults directed towards the person with the problem from the host of whatever you would listen to, they can solve your problems. Now, maybe they're right. Maybe most of our problems are simple, and they're done by us, and so we just stop whatever we're doing, we've solved the problem. But like I said, they always add the personal insults, too. So, the song reminds us where our dependency truly is, and that is in God, and He won't fail us at all. I think that's the other great message. There's no sense of failure here. Failure is not an option. Well, I think I've spoken long enough. Thank you for listening. I'd like to hear from you. The next podcast, I'm going to look at another hymn that I really, really like. Believe it or not, I've never actually sung, but it's great. If you want to write, paulg57@podomatic.com. Let me say also, thank you for all of you who have been listening and downloading. This podcast has broken the top 40. In the art section of Podomatic.com, thank you so very much. I really appreciate that. Become a fan of the show. Write me. Share links. I'm always happy to talk to another person. And I'm going to see you. So, if you want, just go back, listen to the rest of the music. I'm going to conclude this podcast with the playing of Melinda K. Wickham's song, playing of Guide Me Over Thou Great Jehovah. Again, thanks for listening. I'll talk to you soon.